This is Tamara reading the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, April 30th. We'll start with a story from the front page about the Scoville Zoo. Puma siblings in forever home. And we have a lovely picture on the front page of Jacinto Brown, 8, looking into the new mountain lion exhibit after a ribbon-cutting ceremony at Scoville Hill. At Scoville Zoo in Decatur on Monday, April 28th. Our story is from Donette Beckett in Decatur. Zoo welcomes Russet and Yukon, opens camel building. Mountain lion, puma, or cougar, whatever you choose to call them, 8-year-old siblings Russet and Yukon are ready to meet the community at their new home at Scoville Zoo in Decatur. Yukon is the girl and smaller and really gray, said zookeeper Wesley Potter. Russet is slightly bigger and more of a tan color. With puma prop prints painted along the pavement of South Country Club Road, as well as inside Scoville Zoo, visitors should have an easy time finding their way to the newest exhibit. The nearly $2 million addition also included a camel holding building located adjacent to the puma's new home. The puma brother and sister were found orphaned in Idaho, a state popular for growing potatoes. Therefore, the pair were given names of common tubers. Rigo and Jessica Zavala and their children Thaddeus, 5, and Aaliyah, 3, are originally from Idaho, just like Russet and Yukon. They are pretty common over in Idaho, Jessica said about the mountain lions. Since the family moved to Mount Zion 6 months ago, the Zavalas have found Scoville Zoo to be a favorite recreation spot for the family. The kids love it, Rigo said. But I think we were more excited to see the cats than they were, Jessica said. With temperatures in the 80s and light winds, Monday morning's ribbon-cutting ceremony was ideal for the large crowd. According to Potter, the pumas enjoyed it too. They're native to North America, so their temperature range goes from freezing to super hot, he said. So this is going to be perfect weather for them. Potter and other zoo staff will be taking care of Russet and Yukon. The enclosure is located between the Southside Wolf exhibit and the camels. The ZO&O express train travels past the pumas as well. Although the pumas arrived a month ago, they have already become comfortable with their outdoor surroundings, according to the zoo staff. They will also have access to a heated building during the winter months, but they're more than likely going to stay outside anyway, Potter said. They are perfectly adapted to our colder weather. According to Heather Perdue, Scoville Zoo director, Russet and Yukon have spent their entire lives in the presence of humans. The siblings lived in Elmwood Park Zoo in Norristown, Pennsylvania, before they were sent to the St. Louis Zoo, and now this is their final home, Perdue said. They've always been a zoo setting, so they're used to having guests look at them. The exhibit will have signage with information about mountain lions, including their habitat, conservation efforts, and the importance of protecting the animals in the wild, the staff said. The puma exhibit and camel holding building took a year to complete. Much of the funding was contributed by the Howard G. Buffett Foundation. A wildlife enthusiast, Buffett worked alongside park directors with the hopes of creating a mountain lion exhibit. Decatur Park District Executive Director Clay Gerhard said, "You look at where this exhibit was constructed. It was no easy feat," he said. "It was really the graveyard for all the concrete and rock and different things that's come from the zoo over the years. We encountered a lot of fun challenges." Funding for the camels' new digs came from a state grant secured by State Representative Sue Scherer, Democrat Decatur. "She worked hard to get us $200,000 to go towards that camel holding building," Gerhard said. "The building was added to protect the animals from the elements. Being that they're camels, we wanted to make sure they stay warm," Gerhard said. The projects were completed through the work of local companies O'Shea Builders and Architectural Expressions, as well as AFH Designs, a zoo design company based in St. Louis, Missouri. Because of the excitement of the new exhibits, the Decatur Parks Foundation recently received a dedicated zoo endowment at the Heart of Illinois Community Foundation, according to Ali Delatte, Parks Foundation Director. "The Decatur Parks Foundation Board voted and are now turning it into designated endowment funds," she said. "It will benefit Scoville Zoo in perpetuity. It's really going to be able to care for the zoo in the future." The zoo staff hopes to continue expanding, but we want to make sure that we have these new exhibits so that we can support ourselves, Delott said. This endowment is really going to make sure that we can sustain Scoville Zoo. Another feature exhibit in the works will include alligators. We are at the finish line, Delott said. We are within the last few couple of $1,000s to be fully funded. Now our labor column on the front page from Donette Beckett in Decatur, honoring those who died on the job. John Hawkins, latest addition to Macon County Workers Memorial. The name of the late John Hawkins, the owner of Doherty's Pub and Pinn's Restaurant in downtown Decatur, was the most recent name added to the Macon County Workers Memorial Monument. Nearly 20 members of the Hawkins family attended the Workers Memorial Day ceremony on Monday evening. We just wanted to remember him, said Jerry McGrath, Hawkins' sister. The ceremony featured a presentation of a wreath by the Hawkins family, as well as the Macon County Honor Guard, a prayer remembrance, and a reading of the names of those who have lost their lives while working in Macon County. The board for the Workers' Memorial began collecting names 32 years ago, according to Lloyd Holman, Decatur Trades and Labor Assembly co-chair of the event. Through research and other people helping, the newspaper and all of the accidents over the years, we've got 162 names up there, he said. The criteria to have a name placed on the monument includes a Macon County death due to the person's occupation. Some of these names go back to 1888, Holman said. Hawkins was the only name added during this year's ceremony. In January, the restaurant owner suffered a medical issue while at work that caused him to fall, according to family members. The board reached out to the family when they learned about Hawkins' death. Most people don't realize what this is for, Holman said. Some people think it's just for unions. It's not just for unions. Safety is a concern in all facets of a job, according to the co-chairs. We need to look at more safety, more training, more education, Holman said. It's everybody's responsibility, not just the employer's, not just the employee. It's everybody's, even the community. The monument was placed on the west side of the Macon County Courthouse on Labor Day in 2000. Everybody's going into this courthouse will see this monument, said Jim Taylor, co-chair of the ceremony. A lot of people go in this way. A lot come over and read those names. That's why I wanted it here. Taylor was one of the organizers who encouraged the place of the monument in its prominent location. I fought it for 5 years, he said. I finally got enough people on the county board to vote it in. According to Jason Keller, assistant director of the Illinois Department of Labor and guest speaker for the ceremony, nearly 55 years ago on April 28th, the Congress passed the Occupational Safety and Health Act. Promising every worker to the right of a safe job, he said, the protections in OSHA have saved hundreds of thousands of lives and prevented millions of workplace injuries. However, the safety laws cannot always prevent injuries, Keller added. Millions of workers are injured and thousands of workers are killed on the job due to hazards each year, he said. Each loss is a tragedy that has ripple effects on families, co-workers, and communities. National statistics have shown 140,000 deaths have been attributed to workplace hazards each year, according to Keller. That is 385 workers each day, he said. This day honors those who lost their lives on the job. Keller stressed the need for communication as well as safety. When employers listen to their employees and when workers understand their rights and use their rights without retaliation, workplace deaths, injuries, and illnesses can be prevented, he said. Mike Griffin, one of the labor activists who organized the Macon County Workers Memorial, continues to argue for workers' rights. He encouraged others to register to join a coalition to mobilize, picket, and protest for national workers whose jobs are in jeopardy. We must renew our vows to hold these people accountable, he said. They're not going to give us the safety that we need, so we have to take it. We have to fight for it. And our last article from the front page, public safety. Police. Daycare not targeted by vehicle. From John O'Connor, Chatham. Four youths die after car barrels through building. Three young children and a teenager were killed when a car barreled through a building used for an after-school camp in central Illinois. But authorities said Tuesday that the crash that sent six other children to the hospital was likely not a targeted attack. The car left a road, crossed a field, and smashed into the side of the building in the small city of Chatham on Monday afternoon, Illinois State Police said in a statement. It traveled through the building, striking numerous people before exiting the other side. The Sangamon County coroner identified the victims as 18-year-old Riley Britton of Springfield and three Chatham children, Ainsley Johnson, 8, and Catherine Corley and Alma Boonerkamp, both 7. The driver, who was not injured, was taken to a hospital for evaluation, and police said toxicology reports were pending. The driver, a 44-year-old woman, was not in custody on Tuesday morning. State police declined to offer further details about the driver, saying the crash remains under investigation. This does not appear to be a targeted attack, state police said in a statement. Chatham is about 12 miles from Springfield. The deadly crash comes days after a car plowed through a crowded street during a Filipino Heritage Festival in Vancouver, British Columbia, killing 11 people. Similar vehicle ramming events have taken place worldwide in recent years, some inspired by extremist politics or blamed on mental illness. As Illinois investigators piece together evidence from the crash site, residents in the close-knit community of about 15,000 mourned. Several prayer services were scheduled for Tuesday, and a middle school offered counseling. Parents said the youth needing other things outdoors, after school and summer camp programs, are highly coveted, offering a space where students from different elementary schools get to know each other. Jennifer Walston, 43, and her three daughters left flowers and a stuffed animal at the crash site Tuesday. The large hole in the side of the building where the car entered was boarded over with plywood, and an area behind the building was cordoned off with yellow tape. Walston's daughters attend this group summer camp and said they knew Alma and Ainsley, remembering them as energetic girls who loved to dance and made efforts to include others. They were sweet girls, Walston said. This is just devastating. Jamie Loftus, founder of Why Not Outdoors, said security camera footage showed a vehicle that left the road a substantial distance away and sped across the field toward the building. The facility is near a park, steps from a row of houses, and is flanked by farmland. The car then crossed a road, the sidewalk, and Why Not's parking lot before crashing through the building, with no apparent attempt to alter its direction, Loftus said. After passing through the building, the vehicle crossed a gravel road and crashed into a power pole and ball field fence. I cannot gather the words to express much of anything that will make sense in print. However, I do know that our families who suffered loss and injury today are hurting very, very, very badly, Loftus said in a social media post on Monday. They are friends and their kids are like our kids. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker said his office was monitoring the situation and was ready to lend support. I am horrified and deeply saddened by the deaths of children and numerous injuries in Chatham this afternoon, Pritzker said in a statement Monday. My heart is heavy for those families and the unimaginable grief they're experiencing, something that no parent should ever have to endure. Chatham Police Department asked for prayers. A terrible tragedy has occurred here that has affected all of us, the department said in a Facebook post. By Monday night, some members of the community and beyond had changed their Facebook profile photos to an image of a red ribbon and the words Chatham Strong. Now from our local and national page, from Brendan Moore in Springfield. Pritzker denies GOP incitement claim. Governor J.B. Pritzker isn't backing down from the fiery sentiments in a high-profile speech that Republican critics say amounted to a call for political violence from the potential presidential contender. The second-term governor from Chicago, speaking at a New Hampshire Democratic Party fundraiser on Sunday, called for mass protests, mobilization, and disruption to oppose actions taken by President Donald Trump's administration. These Republicans cannot know a moment of peace, Pritzker said. They must understand that we will fight their cruelty with every megaphone and microphone that we have. We must castigate them on the soapbox and then punish them at the ballot box. The latter two sentences made reference to speaking out and voting, but the first line struck a chord with Republicans in Illinois and across the country who called it reckless, irresponsible, and just dangerous. Governor Pritzker's rhetoric has crossed a dangerous line, said Illinois House Republican leader Tony McComey, Republican Savannah. In July, he rightly declared, "Violence is never the answer in our democracy." Yet now he calls for mass disruption, declares that Republicans cannot know a moment of peace, and urges Americans to become street fighters. These are not the words of a unifier. They are the words of someone willing to trade principle for power. Illinois Republican Party Chair Kathy Salvey said Pritzker's ego-driven obsession with becoming president is putting Illinois and Republicans across the country at risk. She continued, "His inflammatory and dangerous speech is focused on further dividing our country, and I hope to see Illinois Democrats condemn his call for violence." Pritzker, speaking to reporters after an unrelated event in Chicago on Monday, rejected the Republicans' framing around his speech, which he said lacked the context of his full remarks. "It's about standing up, speaking out, again, using your megaphone, your microphone, whatever you've got," Pritzker said. "And the piece that I'm talking about is making sure that Republicans know at all times that the American public opposes the policies of congressional Republicans and of the White House." Pritzker's peace comment also drew a response from the White House. Trump Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller said that his comments, if nothing else, could be construed as inciting violence, then mentioning previous assassination attempts against Trump. The governor dismissed Miller's remarks as terrible hypocrisy. Remember, Stephen Miller is part of a gang of people who apparently support the idea of attacking the federal Capitol on January 6, 21, and then offering a pardon to all of those people who committed violent crimes, Pritzker said, referring to Trump's pardons of those convicted in the attack. Pritzker, who is widely seen as a possible 28th presidential candidate, has carved out an increasingly national profile as one of Trump's most pugnacious critics in recent months. In his State of the State address in February, the governor alluded to the 1930s rise of Nazi Germany when describing the early actions of Trump's second administration, saying he was watching with a foreboding dread what is happening in our country right now. Pritzker later in that speech said that when the five-alarm fire starts to burn, every good person better be ready to man a post with a bucket of water if you want to stop it from raging out of control. The governor echoed that sentiment again over the weekend, calling for Democrats to fight back harder against Trump and Republicans. He criticized do-nothing Democrats who have been timid, not bold, following Trump's victory last November, saying they wanted to blame our losses on our defense of black people and trans kids and immigrants instead of their own lack of guts and gumption. New Hampshire is traditionally the first state in the nation to host its presidential primary. Pritzker has done extensive political travel over the past few years, often speaking in front of and introducing himself to Democrats in other states. Just in the past few months, he has been the keynote speaker at both the Human Rights Campaign's annual gala and the Travis County, Texas Democrats' annual gala. He is expected to appear at more events in the coming weeks and months. Now from our opinion page, Musk's Rough Ride. Our first column is from Froma Harop, who lives in New York City and Providence, Rhode Island, writing for Creators Syndicate. "Smart but clueless, his stock is falling." It feels strange talking about the world's richest man, only 53 years old, in the past tense. But that somehow seems appropriate for Elon Musk, who weeks ago was considered Donald Trump's co-president. Now he's clearly falling off that high perch, just as Tesla, his star asset, reports net income cratering by 71%. Musk was undoubtedly a genius at building business empires, not only Tesla, but also SpaceX. He also owns the former Twitter, now known as X. But though he had certain highly developed faculties, he was not a full person at all. One struggles to portray Musk as a victim, but it's become undeniable that Trump played him. Trump exploited his wealth, neediness, and limited social smarts. Start with the 24 campaign. We don't know the monetary rewards Trump might have dangled, but this one-time Trump critic sank over $250 million into helping the president's reelection. Moments after voters gave Trump a second term, Musk's wealth mushroomed in expectation of a lucrative payback. But then Trump made Musk the fall guy for his obviously unpopular plan to cannibalize the government workforce. Not only did his Department of Government Efficiency strip the public of prized services, but Musk seemed to enjoy inflicting pain on thousands of workers. "The real reason for their complaints," he said callously, "is that those who are receiving the waste and fraud wish it to continue." Trump is famous for skipping out on paybacks. As the chainsaw-waving leader of Doge, Musk became politically radioactive and no longer useful, Musk is clearly being shown the door. Just as potential Tesla buyers have gone elsewhere for their electric vehicles. These are setbacks because MAGA got him to play patsy, up to and including support for far-right candidates in Germany. Musk has joined movements advocating for higher birth rates to counter a drop in population, but Musk has taken the notion to weird levels, trying to create a master race modeled on himself. He spread his sperm to father 14 children via a number of women. Sure, he can write big checks, but children, boys especially, need involved fathers. Some of the most screwed up kids come from money but suffer from lack of fathering. Musk's plans to gather the mothers and children in a Texas compound and visit them from time to time is as bloodless as it gets. Why an entrepreneur who helped launch the EV revolution in the United States would work for a man dedicated to frustrating it remains a mystery. Did Musk think he would be spared? Musk, like Trump, needs to be in the headlines all the time. He'd brag about busting unions if that got attention. Musk wasn't content to quietly enjoy his vast fortune or enjoy giving some of it away. A dedicated father heading big companies would have used more of his scant free time tending to his offspring. In the end, Musk was conned by a con man. Musk may have been the richest man around, but he was used and is now being stripped of an exalted place in world politics after doing dirty work that has taken a big toll on his companies. He was hustled by a man who has overseen 5 business bankruptcies, 6 if you count Trump Entertainment Resorts, which went bankrupt twice. Thanks in good part to Musk's money, Trump was put in a position to amass millions in crypto and engage in more grift and perhaps old-fashioned corruption, and Musk got poorer. Musk has an estimated $300 billion left, so no tears for him, but his legend has been sharply marked down. He's now a figure of both hate and ridicule. What a sad combination. From our sports section, Illinois basketball, Illini land high-scoring ACC guard Andre Stojakovic is son of former NBA All-Star. Illinois has landed one of the most coveted players in the college basketball transfer portal. Andre Stojakovic, who ranked 6th scoring in the ACC last season, is the son of 3-time NBA All-Star Peja Stojakovic, has signed with the Illinois team. The 6'7", 205-pounder averaged 17.9 points per game last season at California, scoring in double figures in 25 of the Golden Bears' 29 games. Andre is a veteran, proven scorer who does it in all 3 facets, catch and shoot, off the dribble, and post-ups, Illinois head coach Bruce Underwood. Stojakovic does more than score. He also averaged 4.7 rebounds, 1.8 assists, and 1.2 blocks per game last season at Cal. Andre has great size on the perimeter, ball handling skills, playmaking abilities, quickness on the defensive end, and a knack for blocking shots, Underwood said. Andre is a very important addition for us because of his experience, high basketball IQ, and productivity. He's had very good coaching and shows a tremendous understanding for how to play the game on both ends of the court. Illinois will be the 3rd school in 3 years for Stojakovic, who spent his freshman year at Stanford, where he averaged 7.8 points and 3.4 rebounds per game. Stojakovic from Carmichael, California, was a 2023 McDonald's All-American. His father, Peja Stojakovic, played in the NBA from 98 to 2011, primarily for the Sacramento Kings. The 3-time All-Star was a member of the Dallas Mavericks 2011 championship team. Stojakovic is the 2nd major portal addition for the Illini, joining Zvonimir Ivicic, who transferred from Arkansas earlier in April. Guard Trey White transferred to Kansas, but guard Kylan Boswell and center Tomislav Ivicic announced they are returning to the Illini. Reserves Morez Johnson Jr. and Dre Gibbs Lawhorn also entered the transfer portal. Johnson Jr. ended up at Michigan. Freshman Kasparis Jaconius and Will Riley entered the NBA draft. The Illini are coming off a 22-13 campaign, advancing to the 2nd round of the NCAA tournament. In our food section today, we have some delicious looking recipes for Cinco de Mayo, for the Mexican holiday on May 5th. We have recipes for shrimp tostadas, classic guacamole, for dessert, a lemon blueberry spoon cake, which requires no eggs, and such an unfussy dessert, it's even perfect for a weeknight. From the Gaza Strip, Gaza struggles for food amid blockade. For nearly 60 days, no food, fuel, medicine, or other item has entered the Gaza Strip blocked by Israel. Aid groups are running out of food to distribute. Markets are nearly bare. Palestinian families are left struggling to feed their children. In the sprawling tent camp outside the southern city of Khan Yunis, Mariam al-Najjar and her mother-in-law emptied 4 cans of peas and carrots into a pot and boiled it over a wood fire. They added a little bouillon and spices. That, with a plate of rice, was the sole meal on Friday for the 11 members of their family, including 6 children. Among Palestinians, Fridays are sacred, a day for large family meals of meat, stuffed vegetables, or other rich traditional dishes, al-Najjar said. Now we eat peas and rice, she said. We never ate canned peas before the war. Only in this war that has destroyed our lives. The roughly 2.3 million Palestinians in Gaza are now mainly living off canned vegetables, rice, pasta, and lentils. Meat, milk, cheese, and fruit have disappeared. Bread and eggs are scarce. The few vegetables or other items in the market have rocketed in price, unaffordable for most. We can't get anything that provides any protein or nutrients, al-Najjar said. Israel imposed the blockade on March 2nd and then shattered a 2-month ceasefire by resuming military operations March 18th. It said both steps aimed to pressure Hamas into releasing hostages. Rights groups called the blockade a starvation tactic endangering the entire population and a potential war crime. Item by item, foods have disappeared, al-Najjar said. When meat became unavailable, she got canned sardines. Those are gone. They used to receive cartons of milk from the UN. That ended weeks ago. Once a week, she used to buy tomatoes to give her children a salad. Now she can't afford tomatoes. Now they are on a routine of cans of beans or peas and carrots, she said. When they can't find that, they get lentils or pasta from a charity kitchen. If she finds bread or sugar, she gives her kid bread dunked in tea to stave off their hunger, she said. I'm afraid my son's children will die of hunger, said Mariam's mother-in-law, Sumaya al-Najjar. The 61-year-old said she and her husband have cancer. She has stopped taking her medication because it's unobtainable, and her husband is being treated in a hospital. Mariam worries how she'll feed her children when what's left in Gaza runs out. Maybe we'll eat sand, she said. Doctors warn that the lack of variety, protein, and other nutrients in children's diet will cause long-term damage to their health. Dr. Ayman Abu Ter, head of the therapeutic feeding department at Khan Yunis' Nasser Hospital, said the number of malnutrition cases has increased in a very substantial way. Specialized milk for them has run out, he said. The UN said it identified 3,700 children suffering from acute malnutrition in March, up 80% from February. Israel has leveled much of Gaza with its air and ground campaign, vowing to destroy Hamas after its October 7, 23 attack on southern Israel. It has killed over 51,000 Palestinians, mostly women and children, according to Gaza's health ministry, whose count does not distinguish between civilians and combatants. Almost the entire population has been driven from their homes. Hundreds of thousands live in tent camps. In the October 7 attack, militants killed about 1,200 people, mostly civilians, and abducted 251. They still hold 59 hostages after most were released in ceasefire deals. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, April 30th. Please stay tuned.